was only a short period, mm-hmm. and that didn't work out. We came back, and we lived in Putney. Then we moved out to West Yule, and when he was working at this company, they had free medical insurance, and he'd been suffering, sort of felt very run down and things like this, and you know, he'd always not been the healthiest of individuals, mm-hmm. and then he was just seemed to be, you know, finding it very difficult to sleep. He was having bad diarrhea and things like this, and we, meanwhile, we were still having great sex. And, you know, he did it really teach me an awful lot about sex and about, you know, what people enjoy, because I'd always thought if when you shanked someone, fucked them, that they didn't enjoy it. But actually, in reality, there's a lot of people really, really enjoy it, and he taught me that sort of thing. And we fucked without condoms, because we were this was the days when, you know, if we thought that unless you were actually clearly HIV positive, you weren't, you know, there was, you could get away with it. There was no reason to use condoms in a relationship. So we were shagging away and things like this, and then so we were living in West Yule, and we were quite miserable really in West Yule, because it was so far away. It was a long commute, every day was long, his health was declining, and he, with his medical insurance, they had actually kept putting him through batteries of tests and saying that he needed to take this and that, and they were doing all sorts of things like this. And then, surprisingly, he lost this job the moment the medical insurance ran out. That was the point at which they told him he was HIV positive. So it was quite a shock to find out that he was HIV. It's hard to know whether it was from the transfusions from the lymphatic strip from getting lymph node cancer, but it's more likely because he was from South Africa, from Cape Town. It's mostly from Africa, so he's got the African, he's brought to Africa, because it was still so rare in this country at the time. And at the time, I didn't seem,
what time was this?
So this is, it's 1989, and what had happened, I'd forgotten. So when we were living in, before we moved out to West Yule, that's right. Before we moved out to West Yule, we were living in this flat in Putney, and I'd suddenly fallen very ill, and I woke up on, it was August, 2nd of August, 1988, I remember, and there was a hole behind the head of my penis, sort of like a shark, it looked like, and had this rash. I felt very, very unwell, and Charles then took me to a hospital, which was quite a way away, and they were very excited because they thought it was second stage syphilis, which is very rare, and so they started photographing me and all of this, and then they started to quiz him quite significantly about what are things and things like this, and I was just very unwell. I just felt very tired and things like this, what was happening was I was converting, and I didn't know, I only found out much later that Charles at that point already knew he was HIV positive, but had not told me. Then we continued to have, you know, unprotected sex. So it's one of those things that I still have difficulty with, really, and I think it's, you know, for instance, since then I've never had a relationship. Since his death, because it just sort of put me off, you know, if somebody can betray you so badly.
Things like trust, yeah.
Then they moved into the mild May, and it was a big relief, actually, when they moved into the mild May, because, you know, they could look after him and I couldn't, you know, sort of thing. Because also, in the meantime, we had bought two dogs, and one of the dogs, he bred, the Labrador was bred, and had a load of puppies, so I was coming back from work and trying to look after these puppies and things like this. So it was all very stressful, things like this, and I was just really wishing this was all over, you know, really, because it was just miserable. My family didn't really understand, you know, I had kept it quiet from them because I didn't want them to know, because I was still only in my 20s. So the big rupture with my family, well, not rupture, but problem happened when I went up for my father's 50th birthday. It was a surprise party. And Charles wasn't able to make it up. And he just sort of ignored the fact that he wasn't there and just you know, and it just completely sort of made me feel like, you know, it didn't matter that I was with Charles, but it also brought it clearly home to me that he was going to die, and I pretty much ruined the party to an extent because I spent the party crying and weeping, you know, then telling everybody that he was dying. And he had been ill while I was away. So that was going on. And I told them he was dying of cancer. I had told him that he was dying of HIV or AIDS. And so he was in the Malmö. And it was actually the happiest time then because it was very nicely done. Lovely staff, charming staff. Very, very nice. And then he just seemed to go on and on and on. He was still writing and he beautiful penmanship and things like this. And we had a minor row in the last week or something where he had we only had a very small garden in SW18, and it was a little bit of a patio garden, and he had bought a greenhouse for it for £1,000. And I said to him, I can't fit it in there, you know. And I said, it's not Versailles, you know, sort of thing. And that was one of our, but he then cancelled it. And so it didn't happen. But then I was called at work one day and they said, he's got a chest infection though. It doesn't look like he's going to make it through the day, so you need to come. So I went, and I remember being in the taxi, I very rarely take taxis, thinking to myself, I just wish this is the end. I hope this is the end today. I don't want to keep this going on because he cheated death. But every time he come back, it seemed to be ruining his dignity, lack of dignity. And it was just awful, really. And I just, you know. But of course, you wish for things that you then, when they happen, you didn't. But, you know. So when he did die that day, he took a long time, several hours to die. And he just stopped breathing, really. It was remarkable. Still one of the greatest moments of my life and most memorable moments, because you never see someone actually, you know, a thing die in front of you. And I was relieved and happy that he had died and I had been there, that he'd been in good care and things like that. And then my family came, my sister, my parents were away on holiday in Spain. My sisters came down. And I didn't really expect them to, but they came down for the funeral. We had a lovely funeral. It was very nice. It was very charming and things. And he'd made a great impact on the nursing staff there. They liked him a lot. And I remember the feeling was like someone just sort of stabbed me in the chest at the time. You know, you don't really realise what grief was like, you know. So it was quite difficult. Work was very good. They were very helpful. I'd said it was a friend and that he was there. And they'd sort of put two and two together that I was gay. But, you know, because I didn't sort of, shall we say, shout about it, I think they were quite relaxed. So they were quite good.